Looking to get out of the house for the rest of the summer? Well, then sign up at Agogi Combatives. Agogi Combatives is a 17,000 square foot MMA facility where you're going to learn real mixed martial arts from the best coaches in the region, like Torres Finney, Matt Harris, Elijah Carlton, and Jazzy Sargent. Hey, one of those guys from Agogi, Trevor Peak, who's been on this podcast, has a fight coming up in the Dana White Contender Series. So you're going to learn the real deal over at Agogi Combatives. If you want to learn more, then sign up at agogicombatives.com. And to learn more information, you can find it out all there. Once again, that is agogicombatives.com. Agogicombatives.com.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
Suspect.
This is how I went.
All right, it's Friday. It's time to have a little bit of fun here on the show, and boy oh boy, is that what we're going to do today, is we have a doozy of an episode coming your way. This is a little bit of an elaborate plot for an episode, because it's something I've never done before, but it's something I've joked around about doing a lot with some of my friends and have even said a little bit on this podcast. We were supposed to have an ultimate what to watch guide, but as you could probably guess if you've listened to those episodes before in the past, those are a little bit different than other episodes that we usually do on this show. It takes a lot more editing that goes into that. We got to get all the recommendations and everything, so it needs a little bit more time, especially because this next one we're doing is the biggest, as you're getting recommendations from two different people, myself and a special guest that we're going to be having. So it needs a little bit more time in the oven to get that ready. But don't worry, we have something kind of similar here today, where I feel like in the news recently, been a lot of talk about the stock market, as well as a lot of talk about actors out there. So I thought, why not put the two of them together, as today we're going to be entering the actors' stock market. So get those pens, get the paper out, get ready to write down all of my top-level predictions. I feel like, what's his name, Jim Cramer or whatever, Mad Money guy, getting ready to buy low, buy high, invest, divest into all of these different actors here. So how this is going to work is I'm limiting it only to actors under the age of 40, as to prevent just an overwhelming kind of, I guess for lack of a better term, a circle jerk of just people being like Daniel Day-Lewis, Brad Pitt, Leonardo, like all of these things. I want to get some of the fresh talent in here. The rising stars, starting to see the stock increase on these. So here, you're going to learn who you want to maybe take out a loan for, throw everything into the bank, maybe put a couple cents down on there, as we have some penny stocks we're doing, and maybe a little bit of wait and see here too. A little bit of wait and see, because we don't want to get in too soon on these actors, because sometimes that happens before. Like Lindsay Lohan, for example, everybody thought she was going to be the number one girl in Hollywood. And for a minute there, she was, but then came crashing down there. And then we don't want to have some too high of stocks that we're going to be getting into later for people under the age of 40. So how this is going to work is we have several different categories. The first is going to be wait and see. Then we're going to have our penny stocks. Then we're doing buying low with high upside. Then we have mid-level investment, high price investment, extreme investment. This is where you're going to go all in. You're going to sell the house. You're going to take out from the kids' college fund. And then we have the mega corporation stocks. These are too high for anybody. They're already too big. We don't want to touch these. Too expensive. A little volatile in one of these cases that we're going to have. But let's go ahead and get rolling, as we're going to start with the wait and see category, where we have two actresses that I'm doing here. Wait and see is like most of the time with when you see young talent in a show, a movie, any kind of property, you look into it and you're like, I just have a lot of questions about this, because they have the high upside that you're going to see in our next two categories. You see the potential there, but it is kind of this raw talent. And then you see some of the decisions they've made in terms of casting choices, and it's a little interesting. The best thing I like to say when it comes to the wait and see category was Ben Affleck and Matt Damon prior to Good Will Hunting, and maybe even before School Ties. You could say this, where Damon, very choosy post-Good Will Hunting about the roles that he took. He was very specific wanted to be in prestigious roles with big directors, things like The Talented Mr. Ripley, The Bourne Identity, which he worked with Steven Soderbergh, I believe, for those. And then you have Ben Affleck, who was just taking everything. Jersey Girl, Armageddon, Geely, Daredevil, and you see how that turned out. They've had a little bit similar careers, very different. But then you kind of have the flip side of this where you see a lot of young talent, especially in like Netflix shows. You see this a lot. And then Euphoria is another one that's just a breeding ground of this. We're going to have a couple actors from Euphoria appear on this list later. But I want to give you two very specific ones and then one not so specific. So the first not so specific one that I'm kind of a wait and see on is the entire cast of Stranger Things. And we're going to kind of break down one of those here in a little bit, but all of them, whether it's Caleb McLaughlin, Finn Wolfhard, even Joe Keery in a sense, little hesitant on, and there's going to be another one here that we're going to kind of say for a later category that I feel like's already kind of transcended this, but I want to specifically talk about Millie Bobby Brown in the wait and see category, because this could go several different directions. She's already one of the biggest names in the world at this point. I feel like she's a household name. She's got the beauty line. She's in the probably, I think it's the second most popular show this year. House of the Dragon beat it out in terms of the biggest premiere. And I imagine House of the Dragon will continue to have that success throughout its entire however many episode run that they're doing. But here's the thing. When you look at Millie Bobby Brown's career, you have Stranger Things, that's the big one. But then you look at her performance inside of Stranger Things, and when it needs to be good, it's really great. But then again, she's not really giving you a whole lot with that performance, and it's nothing really to fault against her. It's just the character of Eleven is much more quiet, literally does not know how to say very many words. But when she does do a lot of the facial acting and everything like that, she's fantastic. And the biggest project that we've seen her in outside of Stranger Things has been kind of to two mixed results. The first is going to be King Kong and Godzilla, as well as Godzilla King of Monsters. She appears in, she plays Madison in those movies. In Godzilla versus King Kong, she was in it for like 5 minutes, and it was one of the most forgettable subplots in recent action movie history. And she just wasn't great in that role. And maybe it's because it's, you know, a Godzilla and King Kong movie. The acting is not something I was going to laser focus in at all throughout any of those movies going through there, but she was particularly bad, especially when you had like Kyle Chandler going hard in those movies. But then she was also in Enola Holmes, which is the story about Sherlock Holmes' niece, in which Henry Cavill plays Sherlock Holmes, and then she is the niece, and she's the main role there. She also served as a producer in that movie as well. And in that, I actually found her to be quite great. Movie got greenlit for a sequel. I believe that should be coming out soon. So we have these like three different sides. We've seen her in the massive entertainment property that is Stranger Things. We've seen her kind of meander around. And like I said, maybe that's a byproduct of the writing that came from Godzilla versus King Kong. And then we saw her pretty effectively in Enola Holmes. So we'll see how that goes. I'm always kind of weary about child actors. I know she's not a child anymore, but It is a very similar trajectory that we've seen with a lot of other actors like that. So I'm curious how the fame affects her. I know I've heard some things from people out there who say that outside of her roles, she's not the greatest, which that's a lot of people. So I'm not necessarily faulting her for that, but it is something to factor in. So we'll see. Millie Bobby Brown is going to be a big wait and see stock, because I know some people who would go ahead and put her in the extreme investment category. That would be a not very wise decision if these were actual stocks. You don't want to put all your money in the young actors unless they're very, very proven. I would say you don't want to invest heavily in any actors that are below the age of 21. I would actually, let's raise that. I would say 23. Figure out how they do when the whole world opens up to them in very different ways. So we'll see. That's why I have her as a wait and see. And somebody else who I have here in the wait and see category, another actress very much associated with Netflix entities, is going to be Victoria Pedretti, who's best known for playing Love in You, as well as Nell Quinn. And I forgot the other character that she played in Haunting a Blind Manor, but she's in Haunting Hill House, Haunting a Blind Manor, and You. Those are her biggest projects so far. So here's the thing with Victoria Pedretti is, if you would have asked me this around the time of You Season 3 and like that in between You Season 2 and Haunting a Blind Manor, I think I would have had her a little bit higher on this. Maybe buying low with high upside is where I would have gone, but I had to drop her down even below the penny stocks at this point, because I'm a little concerned about what it is that she's going to do effectively. Because she has kind of been in the same roles, a little bit different between Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor and You. But it is kind of that similar ballpark, and it's in that Netflix realm, which Haunting of Hill House and Bly Manor, great prestige television shows, and You, don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoy it, but I'm not necessarily putting it in the pantheon of TV that we have nowadays. It's just not up there. And outside of her roles with Mike Flanagan and on You, we just haven't really seen her do a whole lot, which is interesting because I believe she's 26, so right around my age. And if I was her, I'd be really trying to get a little bit more choosy with my roles here. Not saying to go the Ben Affleck route and be in absolutely everything that you can be in. However, maybe do some bigger movies. Branch out from the TV side a little bit. See how that goes. Wade those waters. And I'm not saying it's not going to happen. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm just glad I didn't put in my investment for buying low with high upside when I haven't really had any return from that, if you know what I mean. So we'll see with her. I'm very optimistic about her career moving forward, but moving her down to the wait and see category. So we're going to see. And now we're moving on to the penny stocks here. These are very low-level players right now that we're going to be talking about, but maybe high upside, maybe a little bit of return that you can get from this. And we're going to start with a guy who, in 2016, I would have put him in a mid-level investment. Bit of commitment there. And that's Lucas Hedges. He had a hell of a 2016 in Lady Bird and then, of course, Manchester by the Sea. And ever since then, not a whole lot. He's kind of been around in the A24 neon circle, which is a good circle to be in. Not saying it's not, but he hasn't really escaped some of those more supporting roles. Whereas in Manchester by the Sea, he was very much in a prominent front-leading role. He had a killer Boston accent in that movie. He had killer emotional range. He bounced wonderfully off of Casey Affleck, and maybe that's the thing. Maybe that's kind of the missing ingredient, is that Casey Affleck was so good in that movie that it might have been easy for an actor to just bounce off of him with those emotions, especially in a movie that's as emotionally intense as Manchester by the Sea is. But since then, not really a whole lot going on for Lucas Hedges in terms of major roles. Taking a look at his internet movie database page, he was pretty good in Three Billboards, but that was right around the same time. And then in Boy Erased, he was good, but it kind of went into the criticism that had been had with him before. And that is kind of the same thing of his role in mid-90s, where it just was a lot. And sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. In the example of Manchester by the Sea, it worked effectively well. But if I'm investing in this, looking at the direction that a lot of the movies that he likes to be involved with are in, they're not really looking for that right now, unless it is the super high emotion intensity movie that's like Manchester by the Sea, but we don't get those to that level every year. We get a lot of wannabes, but we don't get the real deal like Kenneth Lonergan was able to bring to life. So it's just a tough market out there. It's a tough market out there for a guy like Lucas Hedges. So we'll see what happens with him. I would say if he was in the penny stock range, I'd invest. Moving on, a guy who I thought was going to have a way bigger career, if you would have asked me if we were doing this episode around the time that Game of Thrones was at its height, I would have put this guy at the mid-level investment range, and that is Ewan Rheon, who is much better known in his role as Ramsay Bolton in Game of Thrones, who is one of the best villains that we've ever had in a TV series, in a movie. When I did my ultimate villains list not too long ago, he was right on the fringe of someone I wanted to add there. Maybe now I could be convinced to put them in there, that I've back into the Game of Thrones world with House of the Dragon. I've started to rewatch some of the Game of Thrones episodes. I see how effective he is in that role. And he really, really sells it as Ramsay Bolton. He is such a little dickhead. I hate him. But you can't help but just be captivated by him every time that he's on the screen. Every time. You cannot look away. And then looking at his roles post-Game of Thrones, it's been a lot of TV series. He's also been in voices for video games like Warhammer 2 or Total War Warhammer 2. I know people are very specific about that. He was in American Gods very briefly, the Starz television show, the Neil Gaiman adaptation. He was in Tollbooth, which I don't think a whole lot of people saw that movie. He was very much just in that villain role. So that's why I have him in the penny stocks here, is he's getting typecast, which for some people, like Giancarlo Esposito, that's effective because he's getting the massive roles like in The Boys, The Mandalorian, all coming from his role in Breaking Bad. But people forget he was in Do the Right Thing way back when in the late 80s. People like to forget about that. Now he's in the running for some kind of major Marvel role. He says he wants to play Professor X, but we'll see. I think it's more likely that he's going to be Dr. Doom. But back to Mr. Ramsay Bolton, not been in too many things. The Prince is probably his biggest role, but that's just a voice that he's in for that, along with Orlando Bloom, which if you haven't watched that show, it's really weird. It's an extremely bizarre animation project. It's kind of along the lines of something like Big Mouth. It's really weird. But hey, he's in that, which he has a very recognizable voice. That's kind of another thing. When you get typecast like that, that's all I associate him with, is villainous roles. So if I ever saw him as like a big leading man, let's say in a comedy, I'd be like, what in the hell is happening? But I still really do buy stock that, minor stock, a penny stock, that is, that there is going to be some kind of role coming his way, probably something of a big villain. I don't know if I ever really see him stepping into the massive leading role situation, but we will see. And coming up here, our last penny stock actor that we're going to be talking about is another Stranger Things alum, and this is going to be Jamie Campbell Bauer, who absolutely blew me away in season 4 of Stranger Things as one, a.k.a. Vecna. He was also in Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street with Johnny Depp. He was a very young man in that, very, very young, almost unrecognizable to this point. He was also in the Twilight movies, where he played Caius. That's where most people know him from. And he was in Fantastic Beasts as well. And the rumor is that he was supposed to have a pretty major role in a Game of Thrones prequel show that they were doing called Blood Moon. It was set like 5,000 years before Game of Thrones. He was supposed to have a pretty major role in that story. Naomi Watts was also supposed to be involved with that project, but it was canceled for unknown reasons, and then they moved all of their production over to House of the Dragon. So we'll see what happens with that. I feel like he might be able to appear in House of the Dragon somehow. He kind of looks like a Targaryen, so we'll see what happens there. But also, he was in Harry Potter. He was, once again, the young Grindelwald in that. And then his first major role was Sweeney Todd. So we'll see what happens with him coming up for his upcoming projects. He's going to be in 3 films. He has Horizon, which is going to be a Kevin Costner-directed Civil War story. So we'll see how that goes. And then he's also going to be in a movie called True Haunting. I've heard a little bit about this. It's Gary Fledler's new movie. It's going to be about the first televised exorcism in 1971. Aaron Moriarty is also going to be in that movie, best known for playing Starlight on The Boys. And she is actually going to be part of our next category when we get to investing, and that is going to be buying low with high upside. Now we're starting to get into the bigger hitters here, and we'll start out right there. I do believe Erin Moriarty can be considered in that conversation. She's absolutely fantastic on Amazon Prime's The Boys. She was also in Captain Fantastic, speaking of fantastic, which she was also great in that movie. So need to see a little bit more from her, but it's not like in the category that where I have Millie Bobby Brown and Victoria Pedretti. I feel very confident now with Erin Moriarty that she's going to be getting some good roles, and I'd buy a little bit of stock into her. Now, moving on, we're going to have 3 kind of big ones here. We're going to start with my guy, Barry Keoghan. He was in Dunkirk. That's where most people know him from. He's a very unique-looking actor, very talented. And people probably saw him, most of America probably saw him in The Batman, but didn't even know it was him, as he played the movie's Joker, who we only saw very, 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 very briefly, and we never really saw the full profile of him. But if you go on YouTube, you can look up the deleted scene from The Batman, where there's a whole interrogation scene that goes on between Batman and the Joker, and he is fantastic. He looks very creepy. He was also notably in Killing of a Sacred Deer, along with Colin Farrell and Nicole Kidman, which is always great. He also had a pretty decent role that was going to be inside of The Green Knight. He was seen there, which was in the big movie I was a fan of. Big, big movie I was a fan of there. And here's the thing with Barry Keoghan, and why I would put a little extra stock into him, is he is going to be in the Joker role in the upcoming Batman, however many movies they're going to be making of that. And if you look at the list of actors that we've had that have played the Joker, you have Joaquin Phoenix, Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson, Cesar Romero, which that's a pretty nice company to be a part of. So all of those actors have gone on or had previously done some pretty incredible work. So Barry Keoghan, going to slide the Irishman in there, see what he does. And now moving on, we have two others here that I think are very fascinating. We're going to start with Maya Hawke, who is another Stranger Things alum that we have here. And this is the one of all of the people coming out of Stranger Things. This is the one I feel pretty good about. And the only reason why she's not in the mid-level investment category is she seems to be very into the music now, which that's fine. Her music is great, but this is strictly about actors. If this was the musician stock market, probably would be around here as well. So we'll see. But she is the daughter of Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke, which that alone, it seems like a combination that should not be allowed genetically. But there it goes. It happened, and it turned into Maya Hawke, and it makes sense that it turned out that way because Maya Hawke is astounding in every role that I've seen her in. She looks a lot to me like Uma Thurman, which is no surprise because that's her mom, but she has a lot of the acting range that I associate more with Ethan Hawke, which is pretty fascinating. They had like an HBO podcast that they did together that was super, super, super interesting. And the thing with Maya Hawke that is interesting to me and why I would put a little extra stock in here, and maybe if this is just this weird kind of thing I have in my head where she was kind of slid into the Janet Leigh role. You know, like how she was in Psycho and everyone thought she was going to be Lee and she died early on. They pulled that on us in Fear Street, the Netflix trilogy of horror films that came out last year, which was a really fun time. All of those movies were great. Part 1 and Part 2 were the better of those. And she was in the first part of that. And she worked in the mall, very similar to her role that we saw her in Stranger Things and, you know, went down, unfortunately, very early on, very similar to Psycho. But here's the other thing is she is going to be allegedly in a pretty good role in an upcoming movie that I'm very excited for. And this can be Bradley Cooper's Maestro, where he plays Leonard Bernstein. He's also directing that one. So we'll see how that goes. But she has a role as his daughter in that movie. So I am dying to see how this turns out. And I'm a big Maya Hawke fan, and I'm a big time fan of the way Bradley Cooper is able to incorporate talent in his movies. And I know what you're saying. We've only seen one example of that. And with his time in the director's chair with A Star Is Born. But hey, I feel like that's a big enough sample size that I believe in Bradley Cooper as a talent-guiding director. So we will see there. And then, last but certainly not least, in our low but high upside category, we're going to have Jacob Elordi. And I got a little clip coming up now of why I think he is worth investing in.
You have this image of yourself as so fucking sweet and innocent, but it's bullshit. If you were a fucking sweet person, you wouldn't have fucked your best friend's boyfriend.
You can't fucking blackmail me into a relationship with you.
Blackmail means you don't have choices. But in reality, you do have choices. You just have to own up to the consequences of them.
That is the literal fucking definition of blackmail. If you don't do this, I'm gonna do that. It's blackmail.
I don't care. It doesn't change anything.
It's fucked up. What the fuck? What the fuck is wrong with you? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, everyone's gonna know him mostly as Nate from Euphoria. He's the Aussie actor. Does a pretty good job of covering that up. I didn't even have any idea he was Australian until I saw an interview with him. He was also in the Kissing Booth trilogy of films. Top-notch stuff coming out of there. But Jacob Elordi is a guy who is one major role away from, I feel like, being one of the biggest actors in the world. And I think Jacob Elordi has extreme leading man potential. Because we saw a little bit more of the charisma from him very briefly in Deepwater, where he played one of Ana de Armas' many boyfriends. He was the one that Ben Affleck drowned in the pool. Saw a little bit more of the charisma there. He's intimidating and frightening as Nate in Euphoria. And, I mean, The Kissing Booth, I'm sure, was a fantastic paycheck for Mr. Elordi. And when you look at a guy like Jacob Elordi, he's a big dude. You don't see a lot of those guys like that in Hollywood very much. He's massive. He's muscular, and he's 6'5". So when I hear that, the little Marvel bells and DC bells start going off in my head. And I don't know. I feel like he is at a crossroads where he could continue going the prestige route, with movies like Euphoria, with shows and movies similar to the style of Euphoria, because he certainly has those chops. But physically, and even with those acting abilities, there's some kind of Marvel or DC role swimming out there for him that's just ripe for the taking. And if I was being totally honest with myself, if I was Jacob Elordi, I try to do both. And I know it's really difficult, but there's people who do it. There's people who can do it. And I feel like if you can manage that, not only you get the payday from the Marvel movies and you get the brand recognition, but then you also get, from the other side of that, the prestige recognition. You can get some award nominations, build that resume up a little bit. It's kind of what Tom Holland's trying to do right now. He was in Cherry, The Devil All the Time, but he's also Spider-Man. And maybe Tom Holland's afforded a little bit more of that time because of the weird relationship between Sony and Marvel and the rights to Spider-Man. But hey, he's out there doing it, and you could argue its effectiveness, but he's trying. And Jacob Elordi's a guy who I feel like could possibly be in that very similar role. I feel like he has the skills and the looks to do it. But moving on to our next category of stocks, we have mid-level investments. And we're going to start with Zoe Kravitz going into this area here. She recently got a big-time blow-up in terms of stock price that we had. I wish I would have been on the buying low with high upside side of this, but hey, that was pre-Batman. Did not know what I was doing, but how? Here we are. The price has gone up a little bit on Zoe Kravitz, now that she's in she was Catwoman. Pretty fantastic Catwoman at that. And then she was also in an HBO Max movie I watched. It's slipping my name right now. I believe it was called Chloe. I believe that's what it was called, where she was like a hacker. And that movie had its issues, but hey, you know, all in all, it was pretty good. And the other thing with Zoe Kravitz is that she is sort of in that same position as Jacob Elordi, where she's in the Batman now. She's in the Batman universe. She's Catwoman. But those movies are going to be very different than a Marvel show. Excuse me, that show was called Kimmy, not Chloe, that I was talking about earlier. But she's not in like the Marvel role where she's got to be in three projects a year. The Batman is going to be very spread out, so that gives her a lot of time to be in those more upper echelon roles. And she has the acting chops 1,000% to be in those. And I'm very excited to see that. Big fan of Zoe Kravitz. A lot of people I know are huge fans of Zoe Kravitz. And we saw that extreme upside potential in the TV series Big Little Lies, where she played Bonnie on HBO Max, which that was a fantastic show. That was, if you haven't watched that, they managed to get Meryl Streep on a television show with Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, Alexander Skarsgård, Adam Scott, and Zoe Kravitz. I'm not making that up. That is the actual cast of that show. One of the wildest casts of all time. But yes, definitely have high upside there on Zoe Kravitz, so much to the point I would call it a mid-level investment. And another actor I would have as a mid-level investment who very recently stepped into a role that I feel like has risen that stock price up is going to be Steven Yeun, who is best known as Glenn from The Walking Dead, and he was recently in Jordan Peele's Nope. He was fantastic in both of those. He was also in Minari, which was one of the most beautiful movies I've seen in the past 5 years. If you haven't seen that, I know a lot of people actually haven't seen that. Go check that out. I believe it's on HBO, maybe Amazon Prime, one of those two. Then you'll definitely understand what I'm talking about. He, to me, is the great mid-level investment. He's also in the voice of the main character in Invincible, which is an animated show on Amazon Prime that if you're a fan of The Boys, you'll probably really like that one. But yeah, to me, he is the definition of a mid-level investment. And now, moving in, I wouldn't quite call these next two high-level investments, so I still put them in the mid-level investments, but they are at the very upper echelon of those. And we're going to start with Sydney Sweeney, who you heard a little bit of in that last clip we played, but she is starting to really blow up in popularity, so let's hear a clip of her acting chops here.
No! Yes! Fuck it! I am in love with Nate Jacobs, and he's in love with me! And you know, you fucking give me that look, Maddie, because I didn't fuck your boyfriend. You two were broken up for 3 weeks and 3 days before we even had sex, so I didn't betray you. Plus, you guys are terrible for each other, and you know I'm right, and you guys can all judge me if you want, but I do not care. I have never, ever been happier.
Yeah, she's kind of everywhere right now. Not really so much in terms of roles, but she's just a very popular figure in the entertainment industry. She does a lot of modeling that a lot of people are very familiar with. And of course, she's in Euphoria. She's one of the main characters of that show. She plays Cassie, who's totally an unhinged character. She was also in The Voyeurs, as well as Nocturne. which Nocturne I have found to be slightly interesting. I wasn't the biggest fan of The Voyeurs. I think that movie could have been way, 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 way better. But nevertheless, hey, Sydney Sweeney's here, and I feel like she's here to stay. And if you look at her upcoming roles, she's going to be in Madam Web, which if she's not playing Black Cat in that movie, that is going to be one of the biggest missteps in casting history. She is literally perfect for that role. Go right now on your phone, whatever your computer, wherever you're listening to this, and look up a picture of Black Cat from the Spider-Man comics and then pull up a picture of Sydney Sweeney. What are you doing? Why is this not official? And of course, she was also in The White Lotus, which was a fantastic HBO television show. I think that they're going a different direction in season two. I believe they might be going the anthology route. But nevertheless, she was in that show. She was fantastic in that. And there's that great video of her calling her mom, telling her that she has the two Emmy nominations. So we'll see. Definitely a lot of upside there on Sydney Sweeney because she is a very classic Hollywood actress. The look, to me, she looks a lot like a mix of Alicia Silverstone, best known from Clueless and Batman and Robin, and then going way back to like Sharon Tate. She has that very classic post-60s Hollywood look, which is funny because she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and she didn't have a massive role in that, but I feel like if you were even slightly in that movie, like Maya Hawke, for example, who was earlier or in our previous category, she was a part of that movie. And but they didn't have a massive role in it, either of them. I feel like just being a part of that, being in that environment, a Quentin Tarantino movie, especially one that had that high of a budget, you're just soaking up all that information. I know just in my career, like when I went down to NBA TV and did some work with the Nashville Predators, I wasn't doing a whole lot. But I was just soaking in so much information about how this works. And there will probably be no better place to soak up more information like that than being a part of Quentin Tarantino's set. And about as high as we can go in our mid-level investment before we start breaking into the high-level investment, I would say this one is just like right on the edge. It's really rising fast. But right when his stock rises, it tends to get a little stagnant, falls a little bit, and then it rises back up a little bit, is a guy we talked about earlier, one of my favorite working actors, and that is going to be Henry Cavill.
Funny you should say that, Madame Bajiguero. I don't think this scotch is helping either. If I were a suspicious man, I would say you put something in my drink.
But how do you know I was going to drink the scotch?
I thought I was doing so well.
Yeah, Henry Cavill is a guy who I absolutely love. Most people are going to know him from Man of Steel, where he played Superman. He was also Napoleon Solo in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He played Sherlock Holmes in Enola Holmes, which we talked about earlier. And right now, his biggest role is going to be from Mission Impossible Fallout. And then, of course, he plays Geralt of Rivia in Netflix's The Witcher TV adaptation. And Henry Cavill is just a lovable guy, man. You watch an interview with him, he's a big old nerd. He loves playing his World of Warcraft and his Witcher, and he reads all the books and everything. He loves all the high fantasy stuff, and I totally relate to him in that. And it's funny because he does not look like a guy, if you just looked at him ostensibly, that would be super into that. He's a massive man. He's ripped. He's in killer shape. And it's such a bummer that DC mishandled every property that they've really touched outside of the most recent Batman movie, because he is the perfect Superman. You look at him, he's like, this is a classic looking dude here. I almost said American boy, but he's a British guy. But he can do that look. I mean, you look at him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., for example. He's perfect in that. He looks like a real life Archer. And Archer looks like Superman. So I don't know what the hell they did to mess that up, but he was perfect. Down to the last minute details, as Homelander would say. He was perfect in that role, and they botched it. And luckily now, I feel like he's found, and I hope Netflix continues this show moving forward. I know they're cutting back on a lot of things, but he's perfect as Geralt. I'm a massive fan of the Witcher books, the games, and I love the show. And the show just simply, there's a lot of things about that show that do not work. Like Yennefer's casting, for example, it's pretty terrible. And some of the effects in there, not great. And Vesemir, not exactly what I was wanting from that. But Henry Cavill as Geralt, that's another thing, man. That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. And he's a huge Witcher fan, so he reads the books. I forgot. I think it's the actor who plays Yennefer had an interview where he's like a Witcher Bible. It's like they'll be filming a scene and it'll pull the director and producers aside. He's like, I think we should use this quote from page 256 of Blood of the Elves. I think we should do that. And he's just a lovable guy. I'm big on Henry Cavill. I thought when Mission Impossible Fallout, I thought that was going to be a massive break for him. Wasn't the case, though. But once again, we kind of have to assess this differently because we are in the midst of a pandemic and everything. And if I was Henry Cavill, I would really be gunning for the role of James Bond, which I know that's coming soon. It's coming very, very soon that they're going to be making a new one of those movies, probably several one of those movies. So we'll see what happens there. Looking at his future projects, his big one that he's rumored for is going to be Highlander, a remake of the classic, just so bad it's good movie. So we will see how that goes there. And I just want to make sure real quick that The Witcher has in fact been greenlit for a third season. Yes, they have. So he'll be back as Geralt in that, which is perfect. Like I said, Henry Cavill, every role he's handed, he is just so fantastic in. So I hope that continues in the positive direction. All right, now we're moving up to our high price investments. You're going to have to break out some cash to get in on these actors as they're rising fast or they've already kind of reached a point where I feel like they might be getting priced out here. And the first of these is going to be Andrew Garfield, who was fantastic in Under the Banner of Heaven, which we talked about on this podcast. He was fantastic in Spider-Man No Way Home. He was kind of the unsung hero of that movie. Even now, I still think that after I've digested a little bit longer. And then, of course, he had his massive heater of a movie that was Tick, Tick, Boom. And then he was also really great in Silence, Hacksaw Ridge. He's a guy, and here's the reason I really also wanted to put this above people below the age of 40, is I feel like once an actor crosses the range of 40, and there's notable exceptions here, they have established their identity as an actor. It's these kind of roles that they're going to be going for. Not so much the big stuff, but it's these. So when you get them under 40, they're still trying new things out. Robert Pattinson's a pretty good example of this. He's appearing later on this list. Hint, hint. Where he was in Twilight, obviously, and then he was in High Life, Good Time, and all these really weird movies. Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, Swiss Army Man, Jungle, and so many just weird roles that he took to try to disassociate him with Harry Potter for Daniel Radcliffe and, of course, him in Twilight. And for both those guys, it worked extremely effectively, in my opinion. Very, very effectively. Because I don't look at Robert Pattinson and see the guy from Twilight, just like I don't look at Daniel Radcliffe and see Harry Potter. That one's a little tougher to separate because I guess I saw Harry Potter more than I did Twilight. But also in our high price investment, we have Anya Taylor-Joy. This is the lowest of all of them, I would say. So she's on the lower end of the high price investment, but she's high enough where you still got to break out the pocketbook. She's best known for Last Night in Soho, as well as The Witch and Queen's Gambit. She has serious acting chops to a point that I would definitely put her in this high price category. Like I said, at the sort of lower end of that. And if you just look at all of the projects that she's coming up to be involved with, there's so many of them here, I'm not even going to go through them. Definitely someone to keep an eye on. And then our two that we're going to be spending a lot of time on, you could make a case that both of these names could be in the extreme investment all-in category, but I wanted to put them here for two key reasons. The first of these is going to be one of my favorite working actresses, Florence Pugh. Oh, yeah. Probably shocked that she's not in the extreme investment category for me, but let me explain. Florence Pugh, she's only 26. People keep forgetting that. She's only 26, so we got a little bit of time here to see how this develops, but she's already been in Midsommar and Little Women, which she was fantastic in both. And here's the reason I don't necessarily put her in the extreme investment category, is because she is now involved with the MCU. And there's no problem with that. She was in Black Widow. She was in Hawkeye. She plays that Russian assassin. Forgot her name. Wasn't the biggest fan of either of those projects. But it seems like they're gearing her up to be a pretty major player in the future of those movies. So that's going to take a lot of time away from roles like Midsommar, Little Women. And then, of course, she's going to be in the upcoming movie with Harry Styles, directed by Olivia Wilde, Don't Worry, Darling, which I'm very curious to see how that movie comes out. They released a clip of that, a promotional clip between Harry Styles and Florence Pugh. And Florence Pugh, the little bit we saw her in was fantastic. But Harry Styles, man, that acting was tough. It was really tough to watch. And just all of the everything surrounding that movie, it's just not looking good. And maybe it'll turn out better, but just the whole build-up to it, really not stoked like I was when they first announced it. But hey, I'm a big fan of Florence Pugh. I would invest if the price was right. I just don't want her to stop doing the roles where she really can let the chops go, like in Midsommar and then Little Women. She's fantastic in those. Absolutely fantastic. And then at the highest level of high price investment we can go, once again, this could be in the extreme investment category, but I'm going for Miles Teller. And I know you're probably shocked right now, being like, you love Miles Teller. You're right, I do. He's one of my favorites. But it's kind of a similar thing where we saw him in Top Gun Maverick this summer, and he was amazing, universally loved. But then you go back and you look at some of his other roles, and outside of Whiplash, it's been kind of hit and miss for Mr. Teller. Recently, he was in Spiderhead, the Netflix original with Chris Hemsworth. And I didn't really buy him in that role. I'm not going to lie. I liked that movie up until like the last act, but I didn't really buy him too much as, you know, the good old boy. It just didn't work for me. Because for me, Miles Teller is Miles Teller in a way. And when he's in roles like he was as Ruddy in The Offer, that is when he's at his best. Or like when it's Top Gun Maverick and he's just in like this classic Hollywood role. But then you look at his other filmography here and it's been a little hit and miss, like I said, outside of Whiplash. And then you could argue The Spectacular Now is another one that's pretty universally loved. But Two Night Stand, Divergent, Fantastic Four, and War Dogs are probably his biggest roles. And all of those have been hit and miss movies. His performance, decent, maybe not earth-shattering. But hey, maybe he's a guy who's now found his stride following Top Gun Maverick. He's got a wave of momentum behind him. Personally, I feel like after The Offer, he should have a bigger wave of momentum, but that show wasn't as universally seen as Top Gun Maverick's one of the biggest movies of all time. But all right, going into our extreme investment category, this is where I'm all in. Regardless of the price, regardless of the sacrifice that I'll have to make, taking out a loan, selling the house, refinancing, selling all my belongings, I'll come up with the investment for these actors here. And we're going to start with Dev Patel, who was most recently in The Green Knight, was also in Slumdog Millionaire and Lion. Dev Patel is a guy who's kind of a jack of all trades in a way. And he's really good at the hyper-dramatic roles. He's able to bring so much emotion just by looking at the screen. You know that kind of like longing face that he does? It's like Puss in Boots. You just kind of like melt in your seat whenever he does it because you know he's about to just bring the heat from that role. So Dev Patel, a guy I'm really putting up here in the extreme investment category, is I think he could be a guy who wins several Academy Awards. He's already been nominated for several. And of course, we have to put him on here, Timothée Chalamet. Chalamet has a lot of upside. I mean, he already shown it. He's shown that he can be in the big budget blockbuster movie, as we saw with Dune, and be highly effective in that. But he can also take a step back, be in a supporting role, like we saw with Lady Bird, which he is also fantastic in. But then he can also be in the kind of quirky comedy pseudo-drama like Hot Summer Nights. And then he can be in the mega award-chasing movies like Call Me By Your Name. And he's just as effective in every single category that he's in. And he's going to try out the big-budget movie again soon, kind of a mix of big-budget and lower level like we had with Joker, where he's going to be playing Willy Wonka in the upcoming Wonka. Creative title, I know. So Chalamet's a guy I'm definitely high on in a lot of different ways. And then, of course, also, in terms of the actress that has the biggest upside, and I think of all of these actors I'm mentioning today, even in our less category that we're going to be getting into, which is the mega corporation stock that is just out of our price range no matter what we do, I think Saoirse Ronan is the best for that.
You let me say what I want to say. I don't think you'll mind. Remember that after I had dinner at your house, you told me you loved me. Well, I didn't really know what to say, but I know what to say now. I have thought about you, and I like you. And I like being with you. Maybe I feel the same way. So the next time you tell me you love me, if there is a next time, I'll say I love you too.
She is fantastic. That clip comes from Brooklyn, which is a movie that a lot of people missed out on back in the 2017 Oscar race. Don't miss out on that. Go back, watch it. It's a fantastic movie. But I also could have pulled clips from Lady Bird. I also could have pulled clips from Little Women. There's so many things that I could have done for Saoirse Ronan, because she, to me, is like a classic, classic high-level actress. The person who I would compare her to is Meryl Streep, if I'm being totally honest. She really is. She's a perfect actress. She can transform her voice for every role. I've seen a lot of people say that she is the acting queen when it comes to accents, which I totally agree. Because you go from her native accent, which you just heard for the most part in Brooklyn. She's Irish. Hails from Ireland. Her family does. She grew up in Dublin and then moved to New York City. Or probably lived alongside a lot of other Irish people. And then she can go from that in 2015 to doing Lady Bird, where she has an amazing Northern California accent, which is an accent that you don't really see a lot of people do in movies. She's fantastic. Some other roles that you might have seen her in, she was in Hannah, The Lovely Bones, one of her first big roles, which, talk about a first big role. Damn, one of the biggest movies of that decade. And then, of course, Little Women, where she played the leading woman, Jo Marsh. Which is the second person that we've had on this that has played Jo Marsh. Because Maya Hawke played Jo Marsh in a different adaptation of Little Women. So that's kind of interesting. Very, very fascinating. She was also in The French Dispatch, which she was fantastic in. I do think that she might be going with the Wes Anderson side of things, which that's fine. That's a good director to work with. I hope to see her and Greta Gerwig collaborate a little bit more, because the way they worked in Lady Bird together, sign me up for that. Sign me up. All right, now we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. Just a little bit different here. A guy that I've never talked about on this podcast. Never done it before. I'm joking. This is clearly my favorite working actor right now. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can go back and listen to my House of Gucci episode, my Star Wars episodes. I sing this man's praise. Honestly, he's just a guy who doesn't need an introduction.
You're exactly like your mother. Everything you're complaining about her, you're doing. You're suffocating Henry. And you're like my father. You're also like my mother. You're all the bad things about all of these people. Because you need to have your voice. But you don't want a voice. You just want to fucking complain about not having a voice.
I think about being married to you, and that woman is a stranger to me. Child's marriage.
You've gone back to your life before you met me. It's pathetic.
And that, of course, is Adam Driver. If you somehow do not know who that is, Adam Driver, by far, I'm selling the house, selling the car, selling the computers, taking out of the kids' college fund. I am all in on Adam Driver. And he just makes the cut. He just makes it. He's 38. So he can be on this list. And hey, I'm putting him on here. And he's a guy now who, he's done it. He's done everything. And now I'm starting to see him fall more into what I feel like the trajectory of the rest of Adam Driver's career is going to be. He did the Star Wars. He did the comedy with Girls, which was a mixed show. I personally liked it. I know a lot of people are on the fence about Lena Dunham as a filmmaker, but I don't mind her as much as other people do. He's done the high drama Marriage Story. He's been in Silence, so he's done the historical drama. And he also did that in The Last Duel. So we've seen him in a lot of things. And we also saw him in a big budget drama that was going for those Oscars. They didn't quite grab it like I think they were wanting. In House of Gucci, which, you know, some people criticized that performance. I thought it was quite good. I just really do think Al Pacino just jacked that movie away from everybody else. And Lady Gaga, she was fine in it. She was doing this kind of weird, like, Russian accent, even though she was supposed to be Italian. But hey, Adam Driver is who we're talking about right now. Not Lady Gaga, not Al Pacino, even though I could do a whole podcast on Al Pacino. But we also saw him in the big budget, big movie, like he was Kylo Ren in Star Wars. And now his next big movie that he has coming out, and this is a movie I'm extremely excited for, it's going to be Noah Baumbach's White Noise, which is kind of going to be the last of those big Netflix passion projects as Apple is starting to take into that role. He's going to be in that with Don Cheadle, Greta Gerwig, and, of course, cannot forget about Jodie Turner-Smith and Andre 3000 in that movie. Very, very, very excited for White Noise. Not sure when this one's supposed to release. It's just marked as 2022. But we'll see. we will see what happens with that. So very, very excited for White Noise, very excited for the trajectory of Adam Driver's career. He's also going to be in Ferrari, where he's going to play Enzo Ferrari, which, I mean, come on. Another Italian Adam Driver performance? I'm all for it. And Michael Mann's going to be directing that movie, which, you know, big time Michael Mann guy here. And he's also scheduled to be in Francis Ford Coppola's kind of ultimate movie, Megalopolis, which is going to be about New York City being rebuilt following a massive disaster. It's kind of being marketed as, like I said, the final, yet the biggest Francis Ford Coppola movie. So we'll see. If Adam Driver's in it, I'm all in. Aubrey Plaza's supposed to be in that movie as well. Forest Whitaker, Lawrence Fishburne, John Voight. That's pretty much the entire confirmed cast. So we will kind of wait and see what happens with that. But I'm not waiting around to invest heavily into Adam Driver and the rest of his career. Very, very excited for that. I just love that guy. Black Klansman, he's also fantastic in. Forgot about that. And our final category, I'm only going to touch on this one very briefly. This is going to be called the category that I call the mega corporation stock. So the too high for anyone to really get into at this point. We waited too long and don't really want to do it. And then in one category, I thought about putting him in extreme investment, but I think he's too big now. So this is like your Apples of the world, your Microsofts. This is your tech giants. And we're just going to go through these quite quickly. We have Ana de Armas, who, if this was a year ago, I would have put her in the high price investment following Knives Out. The trajectory was clear. And then she was a Bond girl. Then now she was in recently The Gray Man, and it's just up and up and up. She's going to be in Blonde, Marilyn Monroe adaptation. So we will see. Additionally, we have Tom Holland in this list. Not necessarily saying that Tom Holland is the best actor on here, but in terms of financial return and kind of like a go-getterness, I think Tom Holland is going to be a big-time deal inside of this whole industry. You know, he's Spider-Man. Uncharted kind of worked, kind of didn't. And, you know, he's done sort of the prestigious roles with Cherry and The Devil All the Time. And we'll see. He's been campaigning to be James Bond. I think I read somewhere that MGM was like, no, not happening. But he's a persistent guy. And he's a guy I honestly really like. Just personally, he seems like a great guy. And then kind of staying in that realm, Zendaya, his girlfriend, she is probably the biggest stock you can buy on this list. She would be the most expensive in terms of overall brand marketing. She's part of everything. She's got the makeup. She's got the clothes. She's got the chops to back it all up on screen. She was in, obviously, Euphoria, Dune, Malcolm and Marie. She's huge. One of the biggest stars in the world. And I did put Robert Pattinson on this list. Like I said, would have put him maybe into the extreme investment category, but he's Batman now. He's a household name. I had to put him on the Megacorp stock because I just don't think any of us could afford him right now. And then, I mean, this for a while would have been a buying low with high upside. But in one of her first roles was one of the greatest performances of her career, and that's Margot Robbie. And the role in question is the Duchess from The Wolf of Wall Street, which she just caught everyone's eye physically and in terms of her skill on screen. And that is translated into a massive career that we're watching fold out right now. She's going to be Barbie. Unbelievable. That Barbie movie is going to be crazy with Ryan Gosling. And that's another guy who I would, if I, you know, I wanted to save time, I would put Ryan Gosling in the high level investment category. Because I just love seeing Ryan Gosling. And this Barbie movie is going to be big. I'm telling you, this Barbie movie is going to be massive. It is going to be bizarre. It's going to be weird. It's going to be funny. And Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig behind the camera for this. Sign me the hell up for that. But yeah, Margot Robbie, man. Just go look at her filmography. You'll be blown away. And then keep in mind, Margot Robbie is only 32 years old. That's insane. It's insane that she has been in that many upper echelon projects and is only 32. But you can kind of say the same thing about Saoirse Ronan. Saoirse Ronan is a little bit kind of in that same category where she has just been in a lot of great movies. And she's been nominated a lot for the Academy Awards. That's why I see the trajectory with Margot Robbie kind of being like a Jane Fonda, a little higher level than Jane Fonda. And I could see Saoirse Ronan kind of going the Meryl Streep route. But that's just the way I see it. And let me know, because this was a weird episode that we did. We're going to be doing, revisiting this several months down the road, and hopefully in a couple weeks, we're going to get Logan Nipper on, writer and director. He's going to be doing this with me, but it's going to be about film director. So we'll see how that goes. But I want to thank you guys for listening to this wild episode of the show. And don't miss out next week. We have several exciting episodes coming your way. But thank you guys so much for listening to the Watch It Podcast.